Recorded live.
Hi, my name is Will Morgan from Few Shots to Shaman, and I'm here with Douglas Bold from Mask of God, and you're listening to 42 Minutes, and today we are joined by, I'm not sure what to call you, so I'll just call you the Violator.
That works.
Because I don't know. It just seems funny calling you anything else, but you write for...
Let's call him number six. We want information.
We want information. Go ahead and explain who you are and what blog you do as well, if you don't mind.
All right. Well, it's funny you introduced me like that. I think Kyle Hunt on Star Theory introduced me as Violator, a.k.a. Jeremy. So... You want to call me Violator, that's fine. Like in the Matrix where everyone in Zion uses their hacker name instead of their real name. So yeah. I write for thestygianport.blogspot.com, and I have videos on vimeo.com/violator, which we'll probably be talking about later. And that's about it. I mean, anything else you want to know?
Doug?
No.
Okay.
I mean, we can go off of that because, like, Stygian port, which means, like, a port in the river Styx, right?
Right.
And your name is Violator, which comes from the comic book Spawn, if I'm correct.
Correct.
And both of those are involved with the Seamless Hell. And so is your movie, too, as far as I'm concerned. Like, the video that you were just talking about, Here's Wisdom, that's what it's called, correct?
Right.
When you got into this, did you intentionally line it up? I mean, is that the main thing that you had to talk about was hell, or the land of the dead, as you call it?
No, not really. Let me preface this by saying my favorite color is black, so that might explain some things.
That's you for you.
But, I was, I think I explained it once that I was looking for something to represent sort of an entrance or doorway and portal. And Stygian, besides sounding cool, you know, referenced kind of catonic underworld, dark themes that just, I don't know, kind of went with my theme, I guess, the theme of my life. I didn't really have a plan for what the blog was going to be about, though. I kind of just started off going off of what other people were talking about.
How did you get into this? I mean, was it Casa who you originally, like, keyed in on, or was there another entrance you had to get in to sync?
I was writing on, AboveTopSecret.com forum, and I was talking about all kinds of weird stuff that where no one replied to my post except for one person, Adam.
Star,
that's right, of Inside the Cosmic Cube.
Yeah, blog.
Yeah, which I think he took down now.
Yeah, he did.
But he was basically the only person that replied to my posts there and said, hey, you got to check, you know, your line of thinking is very similar to what these so-called synchromistic, you know, bloggers are talking about. And he pointed me towards probably Jake's videos, I assume, back then. I can't even remember, but... I remember a Ferris Moon and some other people. I spent a lot of time writing comments that were about as long as my blog posts, which, as you know, take at least an hour to read. And then someone said, dude, you should have your own blog. So that kind of spiraled out from there.
Yeah, I think that's been your biggest telltale sign, as far as I'm concerned, is the amount of stuff that you do. I mean, when you do a blog post, you do a freaking blog post that you're going to have to sit down with. And when you do a movie, it's the same way. It's like everybody else is doing these 20-minute clips, and you make it freaking epic.
I'm not playing around here. You want to go to the Stygian port, you're going to the Stygian port.
But it's interesting because, like, everything, I don't know, you have a lot of different concepts on what the land of the dead is. I mean, because we've been talking a lot lately about how the sync is very common to psychedelic, like, thought, or the headspace that you're in when you're under psychedelics.
Sure.
Making the connections and everything. And you do too. I mean, you have there's one certain post that you sent to me earlier about the Land of the Dead that you put out in 2009 that pretty much has the same topics as the movie, correct?
Right. I had done the original movie first, the 10-minute YouTube version, just to get it out of my head, and then this post came later, but it kind of was a lot of the same themes, just written out and with still pictures. But the Here is Wisdom that's on my Vimeo account is basically this post plus other stuff, and kind of comprehensive in the underworld theme, the Zion and Land of the Dead and all that, although it's not really, you know, kind of like I didn't go into anything wanting to talk about it. It just kind of, that's what popped up, and so that's what I wrote about, or that's what I made a video about.
All right. Like
so,
I said,
so something that has been going on is this ongoing discussion about cosmology and how oftentimes in the Sync community we'll have disagreements based on just worldview or perception or point of view, you know, and it ends up becoming like trying to discuss the point of something without not having any common ground, or, I mean, from the differing perspectives is sometimes what kills us. But so it's interesting because, you know, we've talked kind of about a mystical point of view where there, you know, can you speak to a Gnostic mythology a little bit, you know, especially coming from such a place of the Land of the Dead and featured so heavily in all your posts?
Yeah, that was also accidental. I mean, I don't really know anything about Gnosticism that I didn't read in Philip K. Dick's Valis, but I understand it's very Gnostic. The idea of cosmology is, I mean, I love hearing or reading about various different explanations of where the world came from, the meaning of life, the universe, what reality is, but there's an infinite number of explanations, especially when you get into the more entheogen-induced mindset of altered states of consciousness, where you have machine elves telling you where the world came from, which in the Land of the Dead post, they start off with a DMT-induced experience,
right,
where the guy is told by these winged reptilian things that crawl out of his spine, they project this vision of the world's history in front of him and say, that's the true history of man. The guy goes to the shaman and says, oh, is that true? And he's like, oh, I don't believe those guys. They're liars, you know. So, like, you have this mystical thing, like Terrence McKenna's always talking about when he had that idea of an alternate Earth that with the soliton wave of probability, it happened in one universe and not the other. And immediately he says he thought, well, this is really interesting, but it's a great idea for a science fiction novel, and he doesn't, like, believe it, you know.
Right.
He doesn't use it as his worldview. So, you know, even though most of my stuff is kind of Gnostic-inspired, the demiurge and this black iron prison that contains your souls, and it's kind of a not perfect universe that we live in, obviously. I mean, you look around, things aren't perfect. So if God is perfect, then, you know, what happened here? So this is
right.
The result of something else. And that perfection lies outside of this, and or inside, you know, depending on your outlook, I guess. So I don't really take that as that's the way things are, but it's a very interesting framework within to insert these other ideas that pop up, and I kind of just like telling the story. I mean, I heard once someone say they made a movie about something because no one else had made that movie, and it's something they wanted to watch. So basically, I write blog posts and I make videos about things that I want to read or I want to watch, you know, things that interest me. And if other people like it, well, that's cool, I guess.
Well, see, have you ever read Jeremy Narby's Cosmic Serpent?
No.
See, in that, he explains that the people who come out, because Narby put together that was a common theme during ayahuasca trips, was, you know, these images coming out of your spinal cord, kind of like kundalini serpents coming out of the top of your head and talking to you. And he
deduced that it was DNA. Like, it was just your brain's way of depicting your DNA conversing with you. And Kay Dick also said it very closely, related terms at the end of Alice when he whips out, or when Fat Rip whips out the book with Hermes in it, and it talks about Hermes' staff being DNA and the fish around the girl's neck that triggered Dick being a symbol of DNA too.
Right. That's,
so,
that's actually interesting you mentioned that. I mean, for one, that's in the story I was referencing. The guy later found out, because this was a long time ago before they knew the shape of DNA or wasn't widely known. Later he saw the image of DNA and he's like, oh, that's what crawled out of my spine. It was DNA talking to me.
Right.
And in another blog by, that's not his name. I don't know. He's on my Facebook. It's called The Turgid Miasma of Existence. He fortunately only has one post, but he talks about his unspecified entheogen trip where he saw praying mantises mining spice, the same spice that he had apparently taken to get into this realm. But reading the whole story about with the reptilians being sort of the overlords of these mantis people and spice mining and all this, it starts to sound like it has to do with the spinal fluid, and that it's just a representation of, you know, physical things happening in his body, and whether these are spirits mining human spinal fluid for some spiritual purpose we don't know about, or it's just processes in the body that are anthropomorphized in front of us when we go into these alternate states of consciousness. I don't know. He doesn't explain it either. I don't think he has the answers, but there does seem to be that connection to sort of messages from your own DNA, maybe
right.
Talking to ancestors is all about.
Right. Talking that has the serpent and the tree motif over and over as far as the Land of the Dead themes in cinema. See, the thing is, though, is like in your own work and mine with the Land of the Dead has shown me, is that it's almost a clear picture once you group all of the cinema together. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
If you take all the similar topics, there's themes that pass through each one that almost make it certainly deliberate. Do you think it's possible to be deliberate? And if it is deliberate, what would be the point of putting that out there like that? I mean, do you think that has ways of programming us to a certain message?
That's that's a topic where you could say it's people in Hollywood, these cults of Dionysus and Isis and whatever, the OTO and various other groups working in Hollywood that want to put out a Gnostic theme. And I could go through movie after movie. iRobot is playing on TV, according to some commercials, and, you know, you could just sit down and say that the Vicky supercomputer is a demiurge, and,
right.
You know, you go through so many movies and just, you know, there's just Gnostic movies left and right. You can't avoid it in Hollywood. And is that because they're Freemasons and people in other cults and stuff that, you know, are putting out a Gnostic theme intentionally? And if that's true, is there a reason for it? I mean, you can't deny that those themes are there.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I mean, it's nuttier than batshit. Like, okay, we were talking about how the ayahuasca or the Land of the Dead theme is like the land of the fairies, right?
Right.
Which kind of correlates to John Keel's hypothesis from his book, The Mothman Prophecies, not to be confused with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the book basically said that he felt that extraterrestrials and stuff like that were actually fairies from, like, this other reality that lay sideways to ours, and they kind of manipulated our realm just by playing jokes and stuff. It's a theme that comes up a lot in movies like The Knowing and shit like that. So, like what I was talking about with Narvi and how he figured what would basically be called elves or fairies were the same mythology as the DNA. Well, you take an actor like Jim Carrey, and he has all of those. Like, he throws it all into one pot with the same themes over and over with, like, scientific precision. Do you know what I'm saying? And some of it is on purpose. Like, it has to be. John Kidd, the Accidental Alchemist, he sent me a video, and I don't want to let the cat out of the bag because I know that we want to, like, put this out there. But now anybody can use it because I'm going to go ahead and say it, but I'm going to credit it to Mr. Kidd. he sent me The Mystic or The Majestic with Jim Carrey and The Mask. In that movie, Jim Carrey comes out of the bar called the Coco Bravo. Both movies have the Coco Bravo in it.
Hmm.
The original dance club that's highlighted in The Mask is also in that Majestic movie that's not comedic at all. Then, right after that scene where he comes out of the Coco Bravo, he gets in his car and he goes over to a bridge. And he has car trouble with his car in both movies.
Yeah.
And then, the end of this whole episode that's very symbolic, he winds up in the water up underneath the bridge. In The Mask, he finds the mask. And in The Majestic, he loses his identity. But you can run those two scenes side by side, and they take up the same amount of time to get through. It's almost the exact same scene. And
I've seen other things like that, too, where it's like someone told the same story, but in a different way. Like one was a comedy and one wasn't, but it's clearly the same story.
So, I mean, there's certain things that are intentional. There's no freaking doubt. I mean, there's no doubt, but how far? It gives you this weird vision of reality, though, to imagine all of these movies that span, you know, two decades worth of material with hundreds of different stars being
right
choreographed. But so,
well,
it's
like whose intention is it? Is it humans' intention, or are they being influenced by something in the fairy realm?
It's the architecture of the universe, you know. So the archetypes are the structure of the universe, and therefore the monomyth is going to come out in everything. This is one thought, that the monomyth, and you could call it the Gnostic mythology also, is omnipresent. So anytime you create anything, that story will arise.
Yeah, the more, like, tapped into the creative flow or with your muse or whatever, the more that stuff's going to come out. The more you try to force it, the less it'll be like that, perhaps. But
so what's interesting to me is this idea that the Gnostic mythology can be kind of bleak if you take it literally. So reality is either hell or purgatory, depending on how you want to view it, and that then the point of life actually is clear, which is to break out of the black iron prison, or to leave the village, or to get off the island, or we could talk about the Truman Show, which is like super Gnostic, where he's living in the false reality, and the whole point is for him to defeat all these people who are conspiring against him so that he can exit the false reality and return go to paradise.
Yeah, and the whole thing's orchestrated by the god Christian or Christ, but, something, whatever his name is.
And that would be the Demiurge, which,
yeah.
Interestingly, Jason Barrera has attributed the 42 to the Demiurge. So he said that in Crowley somewhere, or Crowley, I always blow that, he found that the 42 is the Demiurge, and I've never checked that fact, but that's a really interesting thing if it's true.
Perhaps. I see 26 as being linked, obviously, Yahweh.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier talking about something that you then went off on another tangent, but I'm reading a blog, Luminosity, which is the Well of wellofhighstrangeness.blogspot.com, and let me just read a quote from a recent post of his. That kind of goes with my line of thinking. This guy parallels a lot of my line of thinking. He says, "My belief is that the beings behind the Greys and many others are the human dead. And to me, it is highly likely that these human dead don't exist above time, but are in fact decaying to some extent. While they may have the capacity to be good, the very life depends on vampiric relationship to living people. This relationship depends not only on mystique, but to an extent sacrificing oneself to an obsession with the phenomenon." And that goes kind of with something I read a long time ago, this channeled whatever, blah, 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 of the Great White Brotherhood and crap like that, where they said that spirits basically suck energy off of people so as to maintain their existence. But this guy's belief is that you go into this other world when you're dead, and you either start to dissolve and dissolute into infinite oneness, which is just complete death, or you maintain your individuality and keep going through spiritual hierarchies from there. And that in this immediate world right after life is where the land of the dead are, and that's where things like aliens and the Mothman, the Grinning Man, and all kinds of the Harlequin and elves and fairies come from.
Witches.
See, I like the way that some of this stuff, like witches, John Keel makes the point that UFOs that we see now, lights in the sky, were just interpreted as lanterns on witches' broomsticks in the 1800s or whatever.
Right.
You know, and so, like, there's this fairyland or the same origin as witches, or the same origin as the, like, extraterrestrials. And in people like, I've seen it in other people, but I like The Rock because he is the Tooth Fairy, and then he is like Race to Witch Mountain, which covers both of them. And then in that movie Darkness Falls with the Tooth Fairy, there's a real strong symbolic connection to the Greys and the Tooth Fairy and a witch. She's a witch. So she's all three in that one, too. She's a witch, she's the Tooth Fairy, and she's an extraterrestrial. So that hint over and over that they all have the same origin and indeed are all the same, like, symbolic reference. But that's stupid. Like, why would somebody do that on purpose unless you really got some kind of spiritual advantage off of that? It seems more like all of these, you know, we have a certain connection to the land of the dead or where our whole, you know, Akashic record is stored. So there's been a way of every human on the planet being recorded in this, you know, gigantic mass consciousness of what would be considered Earth. And that shows through in our media because our connection to that other, like, storage, other than our individual storage, is, like, through dreams and right brain processes, like fantasy or creation of myth, story. And like what Jeremy Narby said is that it was our DNA that was basically the connection to this Akashic record, because our DNA is both a receiver and a, like, transponder or whatever. So it's in tune with everything that's on the planet. And then, of course, if you take, like, what Jim Saunders says, that there's, like, a download of the Akashic record in the plant, like the plant is the storage system. They're connected to it. But that comes through in movies like Avatar and things of that nature. That's why, like, Watson and Crick, is that the people who came up with DNA? They attribute it to a dream. And actually, one of them became a dream. The land of the dreams is Oz or Wonderland. How nefarious do you think it would be for people, for conspiracy theories like MK Ultra, to have these themes of what some would pronounce as triggers? Do you know what I mean? Of using Oz constantly and this being a nefarious thing. Is it?
I don't know. You got my mind jumping a lot. You brought up Fantasia with the world of the dreams and imagination being sort of connected to all this.
Yeah.
And
Cartoon realm is another representation of Oz for sure. Movies like
The Imagination Land from South Park.
Yeah.
It's filled with mythology. You know, it's got Anubis in there next to Strawberry Shortcake. You know, it's like everything the human mind can come up with exists there. As far as using it, I think sort of like the Fantasia story where people just stopped dreaming or stopped reading books or whatever the story was, where the land of Fantasia or Oz or whatever you want to call it was sort of dissolving and disappearing because no one was using it anymore. No one was tapping into it. And I think that would be the main problem, is just turning us into zombies somehow by killing the land of the dead, so to speak. I don't know how you would do that, really. I mean, sort of most things seem to want to trigger you into thinking about it. So maybe they, I don't know, maybe they like it.
Maybe they like it. See, no, well, I don't know. I mean, it just goes back to if you want to think it's nefarious or not. It goes back into that fear of wanting to be part of the hive mind or wanting to be an individual. And I think that that's the problem that a lot of people have. But a lot of people seem to get angry about the aspect of, like, a hive mind or losing their independence, their identity.
Ultimately, if everyone lost their identity, then nothing would exist. Because, you know, God would go back to a singularity or whatever, and that would be that. But there's some sort of spiritual evolution taking place and ghosts and things, you know, exist beyond death that retain their individuality, I think there's something to be said about keeping your sense of yourself beyond death and not melding into the background noise of oneness, which is a lot of what talk about on the Luminosity blog that I brought up earlier. This whole idea of oneness is, you know, death when you look at it ultimately, and that's not really the goal. It's like what happens if you can't retain your individuality and you get scared off by the visions you see when you die and they show you your life and you're like, oh, crap, I was a bad person, and boom, you're dead. You know, I think that realm is kind of like the next step, so to speak, and most of the inhabitants there are the decaying people, and they're the ones that interfere with us and try to get us to do things, influence us, whether it's for good or bad, could be either way, but there's more beyond that, that the land of the dead, the immediate land of the dead right after this, is not all there is to existence. It's not just this and that. I think there's a lot more to it that is so incomprehensible we might as well not even talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, so that's interesting because right there you can see how a mystical point of view versus like a Gnostic point of view, even though they're not necessarily different, but depending on how you're viewing them, could actually be very opposed, because if as a mystic you're saying we need to submit to the oneness, you know, the Gnostic is saying, no, I'm an individual and I need to individuate. You know, I can see how there would be disagreement there.
Yeah, that's the whole, you know, I mean, God, let's say, broke up into a bunch of individuals. You're going against him by going back into oneness. You know, there was, this might not have anything to do with anything, but if you were to, like, run track, you run faster when you're in a race because you're competing. And you're going up against other things. If everyone was just had the same body, or you know, or you're running by yourself, was God by himself, there'd be no evolution. You'd never beat yourself. You'd never go beyond yourself. And I think you need that different point of views and what we call good or bad, which it seems like these higher beings kind of laugh at that. Like when, you know, you meet an angel and they do something, you're like, you son of a, you know, and they're like, hey, you don't understand that this is necessary, you know. This is necessary for your evolution. You need to fight against the egoic, you know, dark nature, because that's, you know, I mean, Lucifer or is kind of that foil or whatever it's called in acting, where the person you act off of, like in the Bible, Satan does everything God wants him to do. He never acts alone, you know, against Job or tempting Jesus or whatever. You know, Satan's there doing God's work and getting these people to better themselves, not destroy themselves into spiritual oneness or whatever the other alternative.
I was thinking about that with Hitler. I mean, Hitler, there's a lot of weird symbolism as far as Hitler's concerned. He was born on 420, you know what I'm saying, which we usually take as perhaps a good thing or a joyful thing or even a benefactual thing because it has to do with Jupiter. And then he was obsessed with wolves, which is also a symbol that I associate with Jupiter a lot. Like the new Liam Neeson movie, The Grays, coming out with wolves, and he's Jupiter. Anyways, it just seems that there's a lot of symbolism surrounding Hitler that says that he was almost a good thing, but that's like our main source of evil in a way. But at the same time, like without World War II, the space program wouldn't have happened. Propulsion wouldn't have happened. Like, we probably wouldn't have the nuclear advancement that we had had.
Mm-hmm.
It led to everything else, in a way. And it was almost like a part... there's a lot... Almost all the events in civilization now, even 9/11, it seems to me, are, like, part of evolution.
Yeah, they've all led to great things that unfortunately fell back in and were used for not great things, like nuclear weapons or whatever. But so many things came out of the space program, which was a total, you know, hoax. I mean, the Russians were blowing up rockets left and right. They had no money. You know,
right.
To tell they were marching wooden missiles down their streets, pretending they had a huge arsenal. So we needed to have a huge arsenal. We knew they were fake weapons, but, you know, we had to pretend that there was this whole Cold War to justify the spending needed to advance this stuff. And then you're like, well, is it the aliens that were trapped here a millennia ago and want to get back off the planet and they need us to advance their technology? It goes into weird stuff like that. Getting back to Hitler for a second and the wolves, I was just thinking about that today, actually, this morning when I woke up, is that I was thinking about dogs as a Hermes psychopomp kind of thing, and Anubis was the original god of the underworld before Osiris, and but wolves in Indian mythology, American Indian mythology, are the trickster god like Loki, and
right.
Maybe because wolves aren't around as much these days, dogs have kind of taken over that role. You know, in a Jim Carrey movie or something, it might be kind of a crossover, a blend between Hermes and Loki. And Hitler was also obsessed with Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And he used to point at his eagle's nest or whatever, which I don't think he liked because he was scared of heights. But he had his telescope pointed at another mountain. I think it might have been Wilwesburg Mountain, something like that, called the Mystical Mountain or Magical Mountain. And there's a lot of stories there about elves, you know, and marionettes and weird things going in and out of the mountain and a king under there with his army having a feast for 1,000 years waiting for Ragnarok to come about. And it's kind of like the Irish, you know, fairy stories and stuff like that, with these people living under the world. And Hitler seemed to be interested in that kind of stuff too, which is interesting. Were these elves telling him what to do? Who knows?
Right. I like that you mentioned Jim Carrey, because with his hounds and the psychopomp to the dead, that's very blatant and obvious. I mean, there's no denying the dog, because you can connect Carrie to Osiris, and you can connect Carrie to Dionysus, and you can connect with all. There's some DNA symbolism, but there's with the Mount Crumpet spiral and the ladder to the moon, and man to the moon.
Right.
But also, there's a you know, he's just. If you mix Dionysus with Osiris, you kind of get Serapis, the guy who stood on top of an alligator like Jim Carrey does in the Pet Detective 2 movie poster. But also, Serapis had a cane that had like a wolf, a dog, and another. It was a three-headed staff. But they were, it's Serapis is Serapis, the three-headed dog that guarded the underworld and tales like Hercules and stuff.
Sure.
So that's all. The dogs are like Serapis. He's got this spread of Serapis through all of his movies, including like Dumb and Dumber and stuff.
Actually,
like that.
Actually, the Truman Show, where, I mean, if you're talking about Osiris, Osiris's belt points at Sirius. The light
right.
from the dome falls, and it's Sirius, you know, Canis Major or whatever, the bright star Sirius. And then he's attacked by his neighbor's dog, which is named Pluto, which is the god of the underworld. And you have all these things mixing together. Another movie I like is Beetlejuice, because the couple swerves towards the dog, and they go halfway out of the bridge, and there's just one plank of wood holding the car up, and on the other end, the counterbalance is a dog that kind of looks at them, smirks, and jumps off the plank, and they plummet to their deaths.
The same thing as in Majestic.
Yeah, that's true.
The whole bridge thing again, with the mask up underneath. See, it's the split in consciousness, too, the realizing of dead and being alive at the same time. And that's over again with Carrie as far as, like, Eternal Sunshine to the Spotless Mind, and Me, Myself, and Irene, and Philip Morris, Philip K. Morris. But it's just over again, like that split, like I'm K. Dick and I'm fat.
Or slow fat, yeah. Well, it's kind of like dreaming while awake or something, mixing those two. I don't know if we want to call it the land of the dead or the land of the dreams. And it seems like dreaming sets you up for death. Obviously, you watch like Spirit World or something, they'll talk about lucid dreaming, or the movie Waking Life. The whole movie, the lucid dream, but then, oh wait, the kid actually died. It's actually the whole thing's him being dead, not lucid dreaming.
Right.
There's a huge crossover, bleed through between the idea of dreaming and the idea of being dead, and this idea, which is in the Spirit World movies, that you kind of have to be, you have to learn to be aware in your dreams, sort of how the Egyptians practiced a lifetime for being dead. I mean, they were obsessed with getting it right. You know, that when you died, you had to be conscious of it, or else you would become one of these mad ghouls that shows up as a gray alien to someone, or as the Mothman, or something like that.
I heard Manly T. Hall say that we have to build a soul. It's kind of like we have to prepare ourselves to enter the land of the dead by practicing lucid dreaming and things of that nature, is what you're saying?
Yeah, well, yeah, and to get back to this guy's theory on luminosity, he said the same thing, is that once you start becoming an individual, not just, you know, having your parents dress you or whatever metaphor you want to use, that's when you start building your soul. You know, you're forming a unique identity, and you have to retain that. And to retain that, you should practice in dreaming, becoming lucid. And so that when you die, like those monks who meditate themselves to death, they know the moment they die that the dead, they're still sitting there mummified in their meditation pose for, 70 years or however long ago that they died.
See, that's funny because I've watched those fucking Ghost Hunter shows and shit like that, and that's the way most of that stuff comes off, as like a recording.
Yeah. There's so many things. Even the Ghost Hunter people study elementals and other spirits like that. It doesn't really get into it in their show, but there seems to be more than one thing going on. You know, some of it's like at the Stanley Hotel here in Colorado. It's built on top of a lot of limestone, which has quartz in it, like the pyramids. And they think that, you know, there's piezoelectric energy, and perhaps that's contain some sort of echo of what had happened there. And that's what people are seeing. Where there's other places where people are chased by, you know, very conscious sentient things that don't exist, at least not in this plane.
Yeah, I've heard that too when you were talking about the Stanley. That's interesting because we're both in Colorado now. We should take a trip up there.
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to go this Halloween to a seance on Halloween at the Stanley.
Yeah, good cut. Spooky shit, man.
Yeah.
That's like some of the most, as far as the Ghost Hunters go, that was the most convincing footage that, some of it, I know that they misunderstood, but a lot of it was pretty good that they got from the Stanley. I went up there, actually, not too long ago, and when you drive around, it's weird, because it's not like what it is in the Stand, where it's so really, really secluded. I mean, it's in the middle of a town,
mm-hmm.
but we came around this corner, and then all of a sudden, you can see the stark outprint of that white building
yeah.
against the background, and it gave me chill bumps, like right off for the jump. Had elk all in the front yard and stuff. I mean, it really is spectacular and gives you a spooky feeling just walking in that thing.
It's an interesting place. We went there during the day and there's a tour going on, so my parents kind of snuck me around and gave me the cheap tour. But
what do you make of 217 or 237? Those are the numbers in The Shining. Do they mean anything outside of, the room number in the Stand?
Do you know any esoteric reason that 273 comes up so much?
Not 237 or 273?
Well, they're the same to me. The 237 is more regular, you're right. 237. Is there a reason behind that, or is that just something that we found through synchromysticism?
It could just be a thing found through synchromysticism. I really like John Kidd's Red Rum video.
Yeah, me too.
Where he goes into two.
Jason recently connected that. It's interesting. Red Rum is also Red Room, Twin Peaks, because that's the land of the dead, the Red Room where the man from another place dwells.
And does that guy, he talks backwards or something? There's something weird about the way he talks.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they record it backwards and then play it forward, and that's how it sounds like from another place.
Yeah, because there's this whole thing of these spirits. You start talking to them, and they say things that are nonsensical or that sound bizarre. And
yeah, like
even in
Carlos writing.
You find out that, the reason why it's bizarre, it's because they're dead and they're losing their identity, so to speak. They're not fully
there. Their right brain. They're right. The right brain's always considered like the land of the dead, as far as I can tell, and it's like away from the analytical overbearingness of the left brain. So, once again, it's that in dream world where you can't really read or process information like that that's not jumbled up.
Yeah, it's kind of, in waking life, he's like, try to, if you want to know if you're dreaming, try to turn the lights on or off, or try to read a clock or something. It's very difficult. I mean, I've had lucid dreams where I've read things, but they change, or it's very difficult. It takes a lot of concentration to read in a dream, at least for me. And, there was something else about waking life I wanted to say. Oh, yeah.
You better finish it. We've got about just 1 minute left.
So, the one guy is playing the pinball machine. He's talking to Lady Gregory, who's obviously been dead for a long time, and his dog, who's been dead. And, he finds out that he's not having a lucid dream. He's actually in the land of the dead, and that's what this place is. And the same thing happened to Dan Mitchell of this Luminosity blog. He meets a friend who he knows from the UFO community to be alive, but he meets him here in this, what he thinks is a UFO, with an entire city inside of it, kind of like Rendezvous with Rama, perhaps, like that book. So he's inside a giant UFO, the city inside, and this guy comes up to him and starts talking to him, but he's talking nonsensical stuff. And he asks him, like, where are you from? And the guy gets it wrong, and then he smiles like, oh, you caught me. And he throws up on his shoes or something like that, and the guy could smell his vomit. And that goes back to Waking Life, where the guy says Lady Gregory had, like, vomit dripping down her chin, and it smelled like dead people vomit, and that's when he realized he was in the land of the
dead. We're all dead.
The land of decay and